who's in the picture? What about the material that's going to be written about the photograph? Who comes up with that? The writer comes up with that, but how's he know?
I will write the caption.
Will you?
I'll write these. That's why I had the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I will have the date where the picture was taken. I'll say President Ford with Coleman Young at the Fairlane Manor, period, and the date.
So you don't ever put any of the emotional kind of...
No, I'm not going to put any of that nonsense on. No long captions, pictures.
Who puts that in? Does anybody ever... I noticed in some of the books it describes the day a little bit. And, you know,
no.
In some books, they actually describe what was going on during that time.
Well, there will be probably an opening page of type, a research. Like Phil Mason will do a research.
Okay.
He may have a type. This happened 1970, this is what happened, but then my pictures will only have captions with what happened, because people will be interested in photographs. Okay.
In one of your other books you had, I think where it listed, say for example, what your, the technical aspect.
That was the Projects of Photojournalism. That's like a textbook.
Okay.
That's different type book.
Mm-hmm.
That's strictly, that book there was made for photojournalism students and how to handle assignments, generate assignments, what you do on your own. That's a different type book.
Mm-hmm. Would you say, though, that would be more, would that be your more of a favorite type book? I mean, what do you like people to get out of
the book? Well, it depends on the market, see, the market. In other words, this book on Detroit, or the last one I did, too, on all the decades of all of people I photographed, cannot get technical. The average person who's buying the book does not care about the film I used, or the camera I used, or the exposure I used. To them, it's nothing. They want to see the picture and the event. Like in a newspaper, you see pictures in magazines, they're not going to tell you they took the picture. You want to see the content, excitement. This is what books are for. If you do a technical book, that's different. It depends on the type of book. I will not, in this book, explain this was taken with a 4x5, this was taken with a 35. No way. I'll lose all of the average person who wants to buy the book. They want to know the content and the event and the people in the picture.
Okay.
Only ones will be interested in photographers.
Okay.
Just the
microphone. Yeah, I just noticed that was...
I won't want to do that. But that's the... it depends, you know, on what type of book you're going to publish. Books, you know, they got to know the market for books. See, now we got Dennis Archer coming in. He's starting a new beginning, a big change, but really a change. Detroit has been moving on a change since 1940, once they started groundbreaking in 1948, when they started the change in Detroit, when they broke ground for the Vets Memorial Building. That's when the book really started coming. They start building. The Civic Center in Detroit really started in 1948, and it's still going on. I mean, the city is not going to be transformed in a matter of a year or two. About 20-year period or 30 to do this change in the book. So it depends on the individual. This will be a book for people who want to know, a tabletop book about Detroit. Strictly what happened, the growth, some younger people today. Well, how was Detroit 20 years ago? What do you want to see, a city, the buildings and all that? These are the things that you want to go. Something that will be a permanent record on a city.
Okay.
Just a mic one more time. Lift it up a lot
higher.
Is the audio muffled?
No, it's fine.
I think it is just sliding a little bit. Yeah. There.
Okay. That's good.
Okay.
Well, I think, and then when the book will come out, it's an interest. Each book has specific meaning, nothing better. But if you want to see a collection of all the stuff I did, it would be in my last book. that has everything in it. The others are individual things. See? All you want to know about how a pope was elected? Then you go ahead and get the making of the pope. That's Pope John XXIII. It explains how a pope was elected, all the stuff that involves in the Vatican. Then the other book was the Pope and the Council, was the first ecumenical council they had in 100 years. That's where all the bishops of the world get together, and they're working on that end. Hello? Yeah, what year, where? Who's this? Hello? Yes? What do you want me to do about it? Well, this is Tony Spina. Yeah, you want to call Tony Antoinette, don't you? The phone man. This is, what you got? Is it 8808 did you dial? No, 8808 is photo department, me. Ken Kramer, tell Ken Kramer you got a hold of me. He's got me on his mind, tell him, Tony Spina. Yeah, okay? All right, bye. That's Free Press, one of the telephone department.
Have you ever done a photograph out there that's maybe been real emotional, some real emotional?
Well, I could tell you different experiences that has probably have happened. Let me, could I walk with this a minute? Why don't you shut this off a minute, your camera. Well, every year you can't get sides. If you get sides, you're done. But you got to, there are different happenings that happen at times. Of course, I got the right end, I think.
I'm seeing some of your pictures there. I think you've got one that I was going to ask you about, how you felt when you were in Bethlehem and Jerusalem, because I was looking at that
okay,
one.
Okay, all right. We'll talk about that then.
Okay.
You want to ask the question?
Sure. Or do you want me? Do you want to start with that one? You pulled another one out there.
No, it's all right.
Okay,
whatever. Well,
right, well,
go ahead. You tell me.
Tell me when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, if you could. To repeat, maybe kind of repeat my question in your answer at the beginning. Like, I felt this way when I did this. For example, what did you feel when you were in Bethlehem and Jerusalem taking pictures? Did you have a lot of emotion? I mean, that's gotta be out.
Well, you outline a story. First of all, you can't really set your emotions because you may get excited in covering a story. You make your plan, what you want to shoot for the day, and go across and shoot it. But while you're at these events, things could happen, things could change, different things. It just has a guideline of what you want to do. So you follow your outlines. Things could happen. Now, for an example, when I shot this picture of Emmaus here, this was supposed to have been we're following at that time the footprints of Christ that we were doing, the story for the paper during the Lenten season. We got to this place of Emmaus. This is a place where Christ walked unrecognized and met two strangers walking down the road, and they said, who is that man? We were talking about that man that was crucified and all that. Well, this is the point of Emmaus. Now, when I got there, Eddie Mays. It's sort of a, you don't expect any, you know, you can't plan things with people, you know, you're going to shoot. They said sheep are going to be coming over this mountain, coming over at this time. This was taken about 5 o'clock sunset. Now, whether anyone would want to know, I did take the picture. I did remember the sheep coming over, and this one person with the donkey saw that. In one frame, these two people on the left, I never seen in my viewfinder, I don't recall seeing them. But when I shot the picture, in this one frame, which I have the negatives, they're all on the strip. This one exposure was here. The next exposure, there was nothing there except the sheep, the fellow that she keep here with the donkey, and it was a little further on. There were nowhere in any other point that those two people were in the picture. Now, that was a following frame. Well, they couldn't fall over the mountain. There wasn't any mountain. It was a small hill. But in a matter of, I'd say, it was not a motor drive. I clicked to the next frame. They couldn't have disappeared that fast. I got a whole strip, and I carefully looked at it. They were framed before. One frame, they were there. The next frame, they were not there. And the scene takes a little further down over here, the next frame. But nowhere in any other pictures were those two people in there. And I still, to me, these are things that happen that you don't see, and I don't know. I'm not questioning and saying, hey, that's something that just happened to be there. But this is something anyone could take whichever way they want. They were there only in one frame. The next frame, they were not there, and they weren't there before. So I don't know. I have no answers for that, whatever anyone wants to believe. Then you have thoughts. You have to think about certain pictures at times that you want to shoot. This has happened about 2 or 3 times with me on certain pictures. When I covered the inauguration of John F. Kennedy, everybody was shooting the close-ups. Kennedy taking the oath. What prompted me to say, I want to get Eisenhower, I want to get Johnson, and Nixon were there. So you have to make the choice before you shoot. You got 27 seconds when they take the oath. So I decided to use Capture 4. I had another camera that I could have gotten close-ups with. In that short time, you don't want to screw around and get something fouled up. So I decided to use it. But look what happened. Look what happened in history. Just think what happened. Kennedy is the first Catholic president ever to be elected, right? All right. Eisenhower was the outgoing president. The five-star general became president. Lost to Kennedy. Kennedy was assassinated. Just think history now. Was assassinated. Johnson then became president. Johnson refused to run due to the Vietnam War. He refused to run. Then Nixon was elected president. Nixon resigns. So just think the history, what happened in this picture. This is what made... It isn't anything else. What made this picture important was the content. Nothing like this ever happened in the history of the United States. We get the presidents, everything happened. And the only man alive is Richard Nixon today. But that's how history goes and pictures happen. I mean, you don't know. There are events could be recorded. But you get this idea, you follow your thoughts. You're not going to argue with yourself. My mind said, shoot the 4. So I shot the 4. I mean, what told me to do that? I don't know. I mean, these thoughts come automatically with you. A lot of decisions are made on the spot while you're shooting. How you want to cover, what positions you want to be. When you go to a place, you say, well, the Secret Service said, well, you got a few seconds to make your mind. This side, that side, where you want to go. So I look where the best light is, I'll take a side. You make that decision. You could be on the wrong side or the right side. You don't know. But these are things that you have to figure out in doing it. That just you give that thought, you make a decision, and how pictures turn out. But I, everything I had, each one has a specific style. The you're recognized by the type of pictures you take, and different presences you shoot. There's so many different aspects that I could go on and on in different pictures, but you don't want to. I just, the few would tell you enough of my thoughts on that particular subject.
Would you suggest for photographers usually to follow their instincts?
Well, how else can anyone control something? First of all, to be a photojournalist, you have to know your equipment. You can't say, I don't want to handle equipment. That comes automatic. All your technical aspects of photography, when you're a photojournalist, have to become automatic. You can't be thinking how you're going to set your camera while you're covering a news event. But you see photographers on a scene. Some like to be here, some like to be there. What directs them to do that? They have to get a thought to say, I want to be here or I want to be there. You get that second guess. And this is how it is. I would say I do follow what I think is right, where I could get the best advantage. A lot of that may come from experience. It could come from a lot of thoughts of the photographer wanting to get the best possible picture that you want. So you can't say, remember one thing to make it clear. Photographers do not think alike. There are no two photographers that have the same train of thought. I may think something some way, photographer thinks something else. Always come back. Every photographer thinks differently. That's why you get a variety of different subjects in doing it. I like this. One photographer once I was covering a fire. He says, what are you going to get here? What are you standing here for? He says, I'm going back there. I said, fine, I like to stay here. I got the best picture of the bunch. He even won a prize. The fireman pulling the hose, the fire in the background. The guy was up there. All the photographers up ahead, I was the only one here. I think it's in the book, Projects of Photojournalism. And that became just thought. What prompted you to stay there? I don't know. I'm just that you have a thought of getting different ideas. You'd like to have a variety of things, too, at times. You don't want to come up with the same type of picture that you would have. You do follow your instincts. You do follow your thoughts. You do follow what your mind tells you to do. You have a subconscious mind. You think about certain things. Many times you may get mental images in your mind. You know what I mean? A mental image before you shoot, you get something, a picture's in your mind. And you may say, well, you know, this is how I'm going to do it. But I don't tell you one thing. You don't want to go insane thinking how you're going to get a picture. When I go on assignment, I have nothing in my mind how I'm going to shoot the picture. I decide when I get there. Otherwise, you're going crazy. You go, how am I going to get a picture? You decide, I get an assignment, I go out there. When I get to the location and that particular job, then I make my mind up. And sometimes you don't. On a news breaking story, you can't. It comes automatically, quiet, fast, and you make that split decision. That's why some pictures fail, some do. Some people get pictures, some don't get good pictures. They're on the wrong side. Some people plan too much ahead of time what they're going to get a picture, and they get there and they fall flat on their face. It doesn't happen. See, in other words, you're going to say, well, I'm going to, boy, this is going to be a great picture. This is going to happen out there. No way. You're going to think it's going to be a great picture. You only decide when you get there and how you're going to get your picture.
What's the success ratio as far as you take 10 photographs? How many of those are going to be good usually?
How many are going to be good?
Yeah, good ones. I mean, I imagine that you go out and take a whole row, not all of them are
well,
going to be
good. Well, let me tell you how that happens. You take the first picture. That's probably your best for that moment. Something else is happening with that guy. You take another picture. That's better than the last picture. Things are happening. That's why people take 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. the last picture, the precise moment, bang, that's your best picture. Could be, and all the rest of you thought were good too, they're good pictures, but that's the key picture. A picture taken Martin Luther King, the pictures on the wall you saw before. That was at the end, when he was meditating after his speech, after he did the last picture, he was just meditating, ending. That was a picture. I knew it when I shot it. That was a picture that I wanted. I didn't want him, got some was raising his hand and talking and all that. These were pictures we had. You have to shoot them. But as you go along, you find out, you know what is your best picture, you go back to the office. And when I send it in, a roll, if it's picked up by messenger, I say, print frame 15. You know, the camera, if I get a good picture that's going in, I mark the frame number because they're always marked that way. That's the best picture of the bunch. Forget about the rest of them, like 15, because this is what had happened. But you do, these things do happen. I mean, you could shoot a whole roll and none of them are any good. And the last minute you go and you got the picture you want. So you don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. These are things. Let me tell you another thing. That picture, if you saw of Yogi Berra crossing home plate in the 12th inning, catcher, Joe Ginsberg on his knees, Berra won the game with a home run in the 12th inning, Berra's on his knees. Every photographer were not there. I was the only one that ran out there and grabbed a picture of him coming across Yogi Berra. By the time the photographer seen Ginsberg on his knees, he went on his knees when he got to third base. See, I had another home run picture, who cares about it? But I went out there because it was the 12th inning. Ginsberg then was on his knees and Yogi Berra crossing the plate. That was a dramatic picture. By the time the other photographers came, he crossed the plate and was gone. See, these are things you just get the instinct to do. A lot of these things. These things happen. There's sometimes some pictures happen automatically. You know, you get them in there by, you know, just happen to get the action, peak of the action, but can't count on that too much. You got to know exactly what you're shooting and what's on your film. Especially when you're overseas, cover the story overseas. I know exactly what I'm shooting because you got to log everything down. Film is shipped back. The editors get, they want to know what you have. You got to outline everything that you have, even though you don't see the pictures. And you explain what you think are your best shots. There are sad stories. I mean, another story, I rode with the policeman one night, and I think I got the picture here to show you. This is a, no, it's in the other batch. Want to shut it a minute?
Yeah, sure. Okay,
hold it. Okay, so this is a sad story that you're
going to
tell?
Yeah. You know, there are times you want to come up with something different, so you talk to the editors and you want to do that. I decided to ride with a police car. Like on a Saturday night, what happens? What do the policemen do? So I drove with this patrolman Tilney at the time, and he gets a call. You see, they talk about different assignments, but of course you sign no risk papers and all that with them. So they get a call of family trouble. So we answer the call of family trouble. He said, well, you know, this is going to be a tough thing. He said, family trouble are very bad. He said, well, no, it's a family trouble. No problem. Go ahead. So they go in the house, they're fighting, everything else, the husband, or common law wife it was at the time. So they resolve the problem. Everything was stopped. So we went outside. I walked out first, waited for him. Then, as Patrolman Tilney, this guy runs out of the house, smacks the policeman in the nose, breaks his nose. He fights with the person. That's the patrolman here, Tilney, beat up. He gets the fellow subdued. The common law wife inside came out, wanted to pull the eyes out, the policeman, while he was subdued, his partner went for help. Called more for call. You see him back in here. Then she ran out, wanted to pull his eyes out. We did blow it up to this way. We called it, Blessed is the Peacemaker. That is one of the most difficult assignments for the police department when they answer family trouble. But this is one of the things that just happened. Now, if I wasn't ready, why did I want to run out first with the camera? Why did, when this happened, he ran, punched him in the nose, but I wasn't positioned then when he subdued him. There's a whole series of other pictures I had, but this is the key picture, so you only use the key picture. While he's calling for help, he's doing that, but then the paper used it this way. They ran one picture, real big. They ran a whole page. Blesses. But these are situations that happen, that you go along and try to enterprise, we call. These are enterprising type assignments. They figure something is going to come up. And you encounter a lot of interesting things. Emotionally, there are a lot of things that happen emotionally, too. One main thing that happened, I think, I don't know if I told you the story of Pope John the 23rd and the sequence. Things happened that when I was covering the election of Pope John, I wanted to get a picture of Pope John. Finally, I knew the secretary. He says, fine. So I went to get a picture of him in his private study. I was only supposed to take a minute because they're going to have Manzu, the world-famed sculptor, come and make a bust of Pope John. And I says, fine. Only take one picture. That's all I want. Picture. At that time, pictures of Pope were very rare to get. So I was allowed to go in there. And what do you think? I said, well, I'll take two cameras, 35-millimeter cameras. I'll put color in one, black and white in the other. I won't use any flash. You use the existing light in the room. The flash may bother him. He may know how many pictures I take or anything in that line. I said, let me just, my conscience told me not to take a flash. Two cameras and one roll in each pocket, and film extra, one extra color, one extra black and white, and a roll on that. That's all I went. So the Pope was standing by his desk and seeing the picture. I walked in there, and I went up to him just about four or five feet away. Started clicking pictures. I remember I was not to talk to the Pope or anything. Back in there, said, and I said, I got time to get a couple of color, took color. Well, the Pope then turned to his secretary, his Lars Capovilla, and he spoke, since this was not an official audience, this one that was made up. He spoke to retired. He said, when is this photographer going to start taking pictures? See. Well, what would you do in a situation like that? You're not to talk to the Pope. The secretary looked at me. I says, I'm all done. I spoke to him. He said, but the Pope thinks you didn't take any pictures. What are you going to do? So I decided. I picked up the cameras. Since the Pope didn't speak English, I could speak a little Italian. And I told him what I did. He's existing light in the room. I'm all done. I'm sorry. It took so much time. Stuff like that. He says, I like pictures like that. And we, since he starts talking, experience would tell you that you're not going to excuse yourself and say, no, I got my pictures. I'm sorry. I'm going. Since he started talking to me, I start answering questions. At the same time, continue taking pictures. Then there was a knock on the door. There was Manzu carrying his partially completed bust of Pope John. Pope said, stay. I said, so I stayed. He sits on his throne. Manzu sets up his statue as a sculptor. And I told his secretary, I said, could I take pictures of this? He said, well, the Pope said, stay, you stay. So I casually eased up around again and started taking pictures. Pope smiled. I know he agreed. 10 minutes were up. Manzu picked his bust up, left. I'm still there. So I started taking more pictures. Bob asked me where I was from, even what my name was. We kept talking. Different things. Detroit, where they make cars and all that. I had bought some rosaries to take back from a nun. Then I turned to the secretary. I said, I felt pretty proud. I've been there that long. I said, you think the Pope could bless these rosaries for me, you know, in this big ornate room? He said, sure. But then they had tied it with string and paper, you know, and all that. I started to unravel that. He said, what are you doing? I said, well, yeah, it's a nice box. He said, the Pope blesses everything, wrapped or unwrapped. Get it in there. But anyway, it was the 2 hours I spent with him. Tell you how it ended. You know when it ends. He walked to his desk. He gave me a medallion of himself. He said, this is for you. I thanked him a lot and everything else. He said, that's all right. I gave one to Eisenhower last month. It was at the time in the 60s. And he left the room. It was only three of us in that room, big room library. It was the secretary, the Pope, and myself. They left. It's about 5:30. I'm in there. I'd never been in there before in my life. This is way up on the third floor of this private residence. I waited. Maybe he was going to come and take me out, you know. Waited. About 15 minutes, I'm in this place, all and I come back. Open the door, see nobody. I says, hello. No answers. I don't know where, I really know I came through one door. But they're all little ante room, another room, prosy room, you know, because this was up in his private study. So I finally went to the different doors. I finally found a hallway. I walked down this hallway. And I know I walked down with an elevator. But just think, it took me 35 minutes, I was locked into the Vatican. If I wouldn't found the Swiss guards who thought I was a thief to come, I said, no, he had the spear. I said, I'm taking a picture of the Pope. I was up there. He said, okay, I remember. I said, I got to get out of here, how to leave. So he finally escorted me out. I was in there, 35 minutes locked up. And if I didn't run into the Swiss guards, I think I could have been locked in overnight. I don't know. But this is one of the experiences I'll always will remember of what happened in that particular time.
That's a great story. I was going to ask him.
Was the string?
Yeah.
Okay. Was the, you know, the photograph that you took in Bethlehem, would you say that was about the strangest kind of situation or photograph that you took?
Well, the idea is, to this day, we call the picture Emmaus. I look at it, and I wonder, and I don't remember seeing them in the viewfinder. They could have been in there. I could have been excited. But when you look at the next frame, they're not there. So I don't know what happened, how it happened. I still, to this day, always talk about it. It's one of the few pictures that I, there was a happening that happened that I don't remember anything being in that particular picture. I've talked to several people about it, and they have no answer, but no one's going to believe it anyway, because I know my own framing. I got the six frames in there. In the next picture, those people that are standing there would be there into the next view you had, but they were not there. So I'd say that's, to me, it's something that happened that I don't know how it happened, period. See, that's not luck. Now, don't put this, that this is a, when you people say you're lucky in a picture, that means in an action picture you're getting something and you shoot it and something happens because you just shot it. You're lucky enough to get it, like at a baseball game. There was a play at second base, and the ball passed by the umpire's mouth. It looked like he had bubble gum, but the ball was in his mouth. But that's lucky. It just happened to trip the shutter during that time. There's a difference between this and something that's in that negative that was not supposed to be there. So I don't know. I say it's strange, but I'm not going to say it's something that just happened to be there and disappear. But I questioned myself about it. I looked, analyzed it very carefully. When I took this one picture, it was only a few seconds. By the time I cocked to the next shutter and the next frame, I still got the sheep fellow with the donkey in a picture, but there was nobody else in that picture. Whether they all at once jumped over the cliff or something, I don't know. I mean, this is something I don't know, but they, I'd say within a matter of, I would say 4 or 5 seconds, because it was not a motor drive, because I clicked one. And when you caught it, a bunch of sheep running, let me tell you, don't ever get caught a bunch of sheep running, boy, I'm telling you, terrible. So you keep moving back and you shoot the next frame. But what made the picture that I like about it, see, I exposed for the sky. I wanted just to highlight what happened. It was cloudy. It was a cloudy day. And the moment I shot that picture, the sun just creeped through the clouds, as you see. Next frame, they were gone. There was no sun in there either. So I don't know. I mean, these are strange things that happen, and it's hard to answer. And no matter who you tell, they're not going to believe you, so I don't expect them to believe me, and I don't care. It's something I live with, not them. See, I don't care what anyone else thinks of anything. I'm not going to go crazy on person, say, oh, I like that picture. Oh, I don't like this shot. I don't care whether they like it or dislike it. You're not going to get everybody to like everything you take. So you have to live with your own thing. The only thing I'm concerned is that in a photograph, forget, every time you look at a picture, a person looks at a picture, right? They look at the picture. But remember this, what a photograph tells you. When you look at a picture, and you snap it, this is the way I consider it. It's a moment in time that was captured through the medium of a camera that will never be repeated. It's gone forever. The only thing that remains is the picture. Camera captures a moment in time. And time keeps going on. It'll never come back, no matter whatever happens. So it freezes time. Freezes time and keeps that. That's how important the picture is. People don't realize how important the photograph is. It's a moment in time that's captured forever that you keep as a permanent record. It'll never come back, no matter what you do. There's one thing you can't bring back is time. And the camera will freeze it, not bring it back. It'll freeze it, period. That's all.
That's probably the strangest thing that you've read in the Bethlehem one. That's one of your strangest photograph that was kind of unexplainable. Have you ever had anything stranger than that happen?
Not really exactly, except your mind would tell you to shoot different pictures at a certain time, and you got it the precise time to shoot it. You know, you got the key point. Hello? Yes. Yeah, John. Yeah. I'm going to be downtown tomorrow. Yeah. You can stop by there. I'll leave it downstairs. I'll leave the book and the other pictures downstairs. About 11:30. All right? And I'll leave everything here tomorrow. In the lobby of the Free Press. Is there anything from the news yet? I'm not going to call them anymore. I think... I don't know what's his problem. And he didn't get anything in response. You think I should call him to see? Yeah. No. Harden. I'll give him a call. All right. Bye. See, I'm working also on a project on a charity thing with the Red Cross. I'm working on their book. That's what that was, the Red Cross. Mm. We're doing something with them on their charity, the book.
Well, I think since you've got some of those pictures there.
Just tell you, open up.
Okay. Are you rolling?
Yeah, I'm rolling.
Oh, okay. I think since you have some of those pictures there, what I'm going to do is start by asking you, I know you probably don't have the those there, but what it was like photographing the Supremes and the Beatles and maybe other celebrities in general. What if you were ever starstruck?
Say president. Start off with. Yeah, things happen. You look for unusual things because the whole media is covering. Then I could, I don't have any of the Beatles here. I could get them, but I got Katharine Hepburn.
Okay. Well,
I got Beatle pictures back. See, the Beatles are in my book. She's not in my book.
Mm-hmm. See? Well, Beatles are so famous, though.
I could get the print. I got it right here.
Yeah. What, well, do you want to start with the presidents then? You want to
look at just things unusual. What do you look for?
Okay.
What do you look for when covering a president or something like that? See?
Okay. Well, that's basically what one of my questions is. What is it like to photograph the president? And what do you look for?
Okay.
Photograph the president.
Okay.
Maybe if you could start it off too with, well, what I look for.
I'll start. I got this on Truman. I can tell you what happens.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Anytime you're ready.
Well, when you get an assignment to photograph the president, first of all, you have to get a lot of clearance. Clearance is the key thing to have. To get clearance from the Secret Service, photographer, journalist has to have no police record. The FBI, you have to get their permission, your screen, before they give you credentials to photograph a president. If you have a record, police record, you will not get permission, even though you're a journalist. So you have to, you're screened by the FBI, you're given their credentials, and then to allow you a spot where to go ahead. And different ways they have, once you get this clearance and they know you, when what happened when President Truman came here in town, I wanted to get a roving credential to roam along because I didn't know. I want to come up with something a little different, something a little unusual, but we don't know what was going to happen. So you gear for the best that you possibly could try to cover. So I started getting a picture of Truman because I had the roving. I didn't want to get to speaking or anything else. But he's leaving the city hall. My first picture shows you Governor Williams, guy in the army. Got this picture. Still, I shot it. Didn't think of anything yet, what was happening. So I followed through since a roving assignment. He goes to his car, and he see into his car, as he's getting into his car, Eugene Van Antwerp is there, who was mayor, escorted him into his car, shooting that picture. But you keep shooting. And then he gets in here, I see Truman, puts his hand, does it, wondering what happened to him. He asks his guy, I forgot my hat. When I heard that, I said, oh, I'm going to stick to it. Next guy bringing his hat. Now, this is not a motor drive camera. I'm shooting frame by frame. So I shot him with the hat. He's so interested in his hat, I keep shooting. He thanks the guy for bringing his hat. Such a big deal, getting his hat. He's still holding his hat and still keeps the conversation with the guy. Thank you for bringing his hat. Shakes the guy's hand when he puts his hat on. Then he's ready to go, looks on, puts his hat on his head. There he is with his hat on now. Left without a hat, and away he starts to go in his car. Harry forgot his hat was the caption. This picture ran all the way around back page, leading on the front page. Five magazines wanted this story. They wrote all kinds of things about him and his hat. What happens? He forgot his hat. Stages in a man's life that they think about. He said, this paper said, there are three stages, a cheerful ignorance, sudden concern, and final decision about the hat, you know. So these are things they wrote, the magazine wrote. They figure out, they start analyzing why he forgot his hat. They wrote these stories on as they were published. But see, these are things that happened. And this sequence came without me thinking, just following him. But I had to follow the sequence. And when I heard his hat, then I kept shooting him only with what happened with his hat. So when I got to the paper, I said, I have a series of pictures. Harry Truman left the city hall and forgot his hat. You get a picture of it? I said, yeah, I got a picture. I got a whole series of pictures of it. So as soon as he got through, we made the photographs. These things happen that you follow through. Another thing happened when General MacArthur came here, and then he went to eat. I grabbed a picture of him eating. Now he's eating, remember, look at the fork in his left hand, or European style, forks in the left hand. Still his fork in his left hand. Well, so someone told him, General, I think you better use the other hand, one of his aides. I heard that. Then he picked up, started using his right hand back. So that made a whole sequence, left and right hand in a picture. But just happened that you get there and you hear these things that happen and makes interesting things. Now, those are not motor drives, they're individual shots. Just stay with it. You don't grab the one picture and leave. You follow it through. When Katharine Hepburn came here, I don't like to pose pictures. This came at the Sheridan Cadillac. I said, any way you're comfortable. Don't make any difference. I'm not going to tell you. You just was an interview with the reporters. Just said, where do you want me to sit? I said, I don't care where you sit. Just feel comfortable, and then I'll shoot the picture.